This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Salika Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
All right, here we go. Welcome in. It is the Gas House Gang right here on KMOX. My name's Matt Pauly. Mike Claiborne is here as well. We are taking you for the next hour. It is your midday dose of sports talk here on KMOX, and we certainly have a lot to get into today. We've got Cardinals baseball as they are going through the process of wrapping up spring training and wrapping up Grapefruit League play. Just a few more days to go. They'll wrap up on Sunday. They'll head to Springfield, Missouri for a game on Monday night, and then they'll get ready to be in St. Louis and open up the season coming up on Thursday. We'll also talk a fair amount about the Billikens, as they were absolutely dominant last night against the University of Georgia in Buffalo, opening up the NCAA tournament for them. That was as much fun as I've had watching a college basketball game in a really, really long time. Tom Timmerman covers the Billikens for the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. He is set to join us at about 12:30. I know we're dealing with a couple technical issues. Do we have Mike Claiborne with us right now? Claibs, do I have you? We do not have Mike Claiborne right now, so we will, before we get to Claibs, you know what? Let's get down to Florida. It is time for today's spring training report.
Now, a St. Louis Cardinals spring training report, sponsored by St. Louis Composting. Composting, growing gardens and making memories. And by Happy Roof, we always create happy endings on the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
Well, guys, as always, wish I could be with you on the air, but we are actually broadcasting the Cardinals game right now. We start at 12:10 St. Louis time with the Cardinals and the Mets at Port St. Lucie's Clover Park. Matthew Liberatore makes the start for the Redbirds, his final start before opening day on March 26th. Manager Ollie Marmol and his plans for Libby.
It's a deload for him. We'll keep him in that kind of 60 to 70 pitch range, four ups. We've done this in the past where we build up, we take a step and deload and then get back going again. So this is a matter of him being efficient with his pitches, executing at high level, and having an outing where he gets to take a notch back before we ramp up and jump into the real thing.
Marmol also revealed to us his starting rotation for the first five games. Liberatore on the 26th. Then there's an off day the 28th. It'll be Michael McGreevy against the Rays. Dustin May wraps up that home series. And then the first two against the Mets, Kyle Leahy followed by Andre Pallante.
Thank you, Tom. Certainly appreciate that. And a little bit of news today, as Tom mentioned, we get more details on just what the starting rotation is actually going to look like, as we're going to see Matthew Liberatore open up the season on Thursday against the Tampa Bay Rays. And then at that point, they'll have their off day on Friday. Michael McGreevy will start on Saturday, Dustin May on Sunday. So McGreevy, the number two starter. I say number two starter. They're not. This is just the order that they're in. Don't put too much stock into it in terms of what order. But Dustin May is going to get the third start on Sunday against Tampa. And then the Mets do come to town for the second series of the year. Kyle Leahy will start game one of that, and then Andre Pallante will start game number two. I do believe we have Mike Claiborne on the line with us now. Claibs, good to talk to you. We had countdown last night, and we got a little bit more time together here today.
A little bit more time today, and a whole lot to talk about, man. I mean, you know, obviously Cardinals winding things down here in Florida. College basketball is underway in St. Louis U last night. That was something I'd never seen before. And I want to give a shout out to Incarnate Word Academy, who won their 16th state championship today in St. Louis in Columbia, but also their ninth championship in a row. So think about that for a minute. Think about how many kids have gone and played in Incarnate Word that have been on a state championship team the whole time they were there.
It's remarkable. It is remarkable,
unlike
to say the least.
Missouri, for sure. Yeah,
yeah, ab- Absolutely. Very, very cool. We're going to talk about the Billikens coming up in our next segment, and also at 12:30 when Tom Timmerman is set to join us. Just want to get your thoughts on the news of the day, because we now have the order of the rotation for the Cardinals. And I guess the only maybe surprise is that it's going to be Dustin May as the number three, again, the third start, Michael McGreevy the second. But it will go Libertor, McGreevy, May, Leahy, and Pallante. And that's going to be the Cardinal rotation in that order for the first little while, until we get to a point maybe a few weeks into the season where those off days start to dry up a bit.
Yeah, I just think it's something, as you touched on early, let's not etch this in stone. I mean, I don't think there's a lot to say about it other than the fact that maybe they want to make sure that they're on proper rest days because, you know, McGreevy was throwing on the backfield last week. So it may be something along that line, just making sure the moon and stars are aligned early. And as you mentioned, those off days are going to dry up here fairly soon. So you want to keep guys as fresh as you can.
Yeah, and look, I think you look at this rotation, Klaibs, and top to bottom, it's everybody's kind of in a different spot, I guess you would say. Libertor emerging into this role as being the top starter and the guy who's now got as much service time as anybody who has been with the Cardinals. Michael McGreevy was the guy last year who you were just trying to find spots for, and then finally after some moves were made, he got that opportunity. He ran with it, and he's very good at getting better from one start to the next. Dustin May probably has the highest ceiling, but he's coming back off some really major medical stuff. Kyle Leahy into the rotation as a starter for the first time ever. And Andre Pallante is trying to fix himself from last year. So I think it's fun for us because we have different storylines about every single one of these guys.
All I can say is you just never know what you're going to see when you show up to the ballpark this year, because we're all going to learn and listen at the same time. And I'm looking forward to that aspect. There's some guys that are trying to, A, atone for what's happened in the past. B, guys are saying, I'm really healthy now. We have another guy who's going to start for the first time. I mean, every individual has a unique story, in my opinion, and that's what's going to make this fun and certainly interesting.
I wanted to throw this at you. Kevin Wheeler and I talked about this a little bit yesterday on the Rush Hour program. We're doing the thing where we're trying to figure out what the roster might look like, and it is somewhat connected to Nelson Velasquez. It's because, you know, what do you do to potentially get Velasquez on this roster? Because it feels like he's earned it, and maybe he's earned a very prominent role in this on this team, at least till Lars Nootbaar arrives. And there's different ways you can do it. You can I don't think they're going to do anything funny with Jordan Walker. I think he's going to be on the opening day roster, but you could have Walker at Memphis. Again, I don't think that's going to happen. You could have Thomas Tsegesi at Memphis to start the season, which is a possibility. But Klaibs, I was listening to Ali talk yesterday, and he was talking about Yvonne Herrera and Yvonne Herrera catching. And he specifically mentioned trying to get Herrera in there as a catcher a couple times a week. And if you're talking about a couple times a week, that's two times a week, and you're generally playing six games a week. It is not crazy to think that if you're actually going to start Herrera twice a week behind the plate, then you give four starts to Pedro Pages, and maybe Joel Pozo is the guy who ends up at AAA, and that opens up the door for Nelson Velasquez. We had all assumed that Pozo had kind of locked up a spot on this roster when they sent Crooks to minor league camp. Do you think, I'm just throwing this out into the universe, do you think there is a scenario where, as a way to get Nelson Velasquez on this roster, that maybe Pozo is not on the team and that means more catching for Herrera?
Well, you know, I think I probably would say no, for the mere fact that Herrera hasn't caught enough here in spring training to know whether he's going to be up, be able to play or not. I know there's this fascination with him trying to catch, and we saw him really struggle at certain times, but I think the bigger issue with him is the injury factor. I mean, you know, trying to get 120 games out of him is going to be, I think, what we should be looking at, maybe 130. And how that looks, I think you're going to see more of it as a DH. So I think Pozo's value, and now also the fact that Pozo can pinch hit. That's, and you know, we don't use it as much as we used to, but he's a guy that can run into one and really keep an inning alive. Now, the problem with that is you put him on the bases, you have to burn another player. But I think he probably serves more value there. And I think in Sajacy's case, you know, he needs to play. He hasn't played very much because of WBC and even when he came back. So I think that's a guy I want to make sure I have a sharp back coming out of Memphis if I need him.
Speaking of running into one just now, and Klaibs, in your favorite place in the world, Port St. Lucie, Florida, Ramon Urias just hit a home run. He's somebody that was brought in to do a little bit with the bat from the right-handed side, in addition to being a high-level defender on the infield. So that's good to see. That we haven't seen a whole lot from him. He has been slowed down by some medical stuff and some injury stuff here in spring. It'd be really good if you could get Ramon Urias getting going here at the end of spring.
Yeah, you know, he was almost a forgotten guy when you think about what happened to him. You brought him in right at the beginning of spring training, and then all of a sudden he gets hurt, and we really didn't see him very much. And now he's starting to come around, and hopefully this is a good omen for what's going to be for him for his future here in St. Louis.
That's Mike Claiborne. I'm Matt Pauly. This is the Gas House Gang right here on KMOX. Again, we'll get back into the Cardinals coming up later on in the program. We'll keep you updated on what's going on with them against the Mets. But we're going to shift gears. We're going to talk college basketball. It was truly a special night in the history of St. Louis University Billikens basketball last night as they dominated the University of Georgia. Illinois won. Missouri plays tonight. Man, it's a great time for college basketball. We're discussing it next. It's the Gas House Gang on KMOX. It's the Gas House Gang right here on KMOX alongside of Mike Claiborne. I'm Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us today. We are taking you all the way until 1 o'clock. Tom Timmerman from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. He is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll get his thoughts on what we saw last night from the St. Louis University Billikens as domination might not be a strong enough word for what SLU did last night against Georgia. They got up early. They stayed up. They came out in the second half and absolutely rolled. And when all was said and done, Missouri won last night 102-77. Klaibs, I don't know about you. It's been a pretty long time since I've been able to sit back and just enjoy a college basketball game the way I enjoyed that performance from Missouri last night, or excuse me, from St. Louis University last night.
Well, Missouri has one of those coming tonight, so you just jumped the gun a little bit. No, you know, listen, I've been following the Billikens all my life, and I've been part of some of the greatest games that they've ever played, and I was thinking about the game against New Mexico many years ago where they were down 20 at the half. But watching that clinic last night, and that's what it was, and it really started with just good defense. I mean, they just outworked Georgia, and Georgia didn't have a plan B, which was really surprising because I think Mike White's a pretty good coach. But the way it happened and how consistent they were, and you look at the score sheet, the ballot scoring, it wasn't like somebody went nuts last night. They just all came together. And I'd like to know this question. Maybe Tom Timmerman might know. I'd like to know, of all the SEC teams, which one of them gave up 100 to a non-conference team like Georgia did last night?
I mean, doesn't happen often.
Conference. Yeah, that's my point. And so for SLU to do it on neutral floor just says how rich this was as far as what it means to the program. And I think it also sends that message to these major universities, these major programs, that these mid-majors, man, they come, they're for real. Because the portal has allowed those kids to go somewhere and play more than they were if they were playing at Georgia or Auburn or wherever you want to look at. And it really showed last night. And I just thought Josh did a really nice job as far as pairing people. He knew when to take out of the game. It was just a flawless effort, and we may not ever see another one like it. I'm just glad I was part of able to watch that one last night, or really listen to it. Because last night, man, I was in Miami watching Luka give the Miami Heat 60, and he could have had 75. So I was driving back from Miami listening to Bob and Earl, and it was classic radio for sure. But man, it was something. It was something I won't ever forget.
27 assists on 42 baskets, and they out-rebound them in the game 47-36, and each of those numbers actually were more dominant until we got into the final few minutes of the game. The thing that struck me, Klaibs, I saw a SLU team, and I'm not trying to be cliche here, but I saw a SLU team that just worked their tails off. If it was a 50-50 ball in the early going, SLU was going to get it. If it was a contested rebound, SLU was going to get it. When this game was still kind of up in the air, the Billikens clearly and obviously wanted it more. And then Georgia wasn't ready for the SLU game. And SLU runs a really unique offense with all the back cuts and everything that they do. But that... You're Georgia. You're an SEC team. You've seen everything. Like, you shouldn't look as undermanned against it as they did last night.
Yeah, when you look at the numbers up front, I mean, they had some rebounders. They had everything that you thought would make this an interesting game. But, man, what were they up? SLU was up by 40 at one point, right?
Weren't
they up by 40?
I believe so. They were doubling them up early on in the second half.
I know I texted Rammer last night, and I said, I bet Principia gave Billikens a better game than what Georgia's giving them right now. I mean, you know, it was just – I mean, I was stunned. And it's not that I didn't think SLU didn't have a chance, but just the way they conducted things. And what do they have, three three-point shots at the half? So that means they had a lot of layups, a lot of makes, you know, easy shots that were uncontested that they were able to make. And I give you, here's the other thing. Referees let them play last night. It was a pretty physical game. Officials let them play, no ticky-tack fouls. And once guys knew the tempo, they SLU just put their foot on the gas pedal, man, and just drove them right out into Niagara Falls for the most part.
I will say this about the free throws, though. Georgia attempted 26 free throws last night. SLU attempted 11. If you would have told me that number going into the game, Klaibs, I would not have thought that there would be a chance in the world that the Billikens could even win, more or less they win the way that they won.
No, that's a good point. Because a lot of times free throws, especially in the tournament, man, it just stands out so much. But it was the fact that the Georgia couldn't follow because they couldn't catch him.
Yeah.
You know, and then after a while, it just became, you know, when they raised the white flag, I really thought Georgia was going to have a gut punch in the first 5 to 8 minutes of the second half. We never saw it. They had one little run, I think it was like 10-3. And then after that, SLU was like, oh, that's all you got? And then they just went back at it, man, and just gave him a good going over. So it's good to have this win. Now you can build on Michigan. That's a little bit of a different animal there. That Michigan bunch, I mean, they have size, they have talent. But these two coaches know each other fairly well. So I'm sure that Josh will have a game plan for him and the Michigan bunch. But they're good. They're real good.
Yeah, so Josh Schertz and Dusty May, the Michigan coach, they are best of friends. They are very, very, very close. So much so, Klaibs, and this is just another thing, they, not expecting to play each other, they share with each other practice film. So Michigan has SLU's practice film. SLU has Michigan's practice film because they both kind of play off what the other ones do. So, I mean, these two teams, this is going to be very different than Georgia. Zach Bovaer, one of the assistant coaches, was on the postgame show yesterday, and he said that was as simple of a game plan that SLU had this year, and Georgia still wasn't ready for it. Michigan's going to probably be ready for anything SLU hands to them coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, you know what? You hit the nail on the head. They have to be ready for anything. You know, when you look at SLU, they may not have the size that you would like to have against Michigan. But, man, they just outworked Georgia, and they're going to have to do the same thing against Michigan. I'm just looking forward to the game. You know, at this point, we're playing with house money.
Yeah, and look, I think if SLU replicates the effort and the efficiency that they put on the floor yesterday, I don't think that guarantees them a win by any stretch of the mind. Michigan might just go win the national title this year. They are that good. They are one of the best teams in the nation. But I will say this, if SLU can replicate some of what they did yesterday, Klaibs, I think they've got that puncher shot. I think, you know, Josh Schertz said it in his postgame yesterday, this is not a best of seven series. It is a go out and beat a team once, and it will take a lot from SLU, and they'll probably have to get a little bit of help from Michigan, but I think that effort yesterday puts them in position to maybe do something kind of special tomorrow.
You know, the other thing I would say to that is, Dusty May has great motivation here because he's going to show his players, look, this is what happens when you don't take your opponent serious. And just the mere fact that, you know, Michigan is expected to win. What happens if Michigan has a slow leak in the tire and they can't fix it quick enough where SLU all of a sudden gets up by 8, 12 points, maybe even more? Does Michigan have the wherewithal to be able to survive and make another run later in the game, or do they roll up the white flag too because they're expected to win?
Yeah, and I don't know. I think Michigan, like yesterday, Howard played Michigan tough for 30 minutes, and then Michigan mm-hmm. just decided that they were going to turn it on, and they ended up winning by, I think, close to 30 yesterday. And I was glad that happened. I did not want to see them play a tight game throughout against Howard because maybe that turns them on a little bit going into this one. Yeah. But look, when you're talking about teams that are this good and you're talking about the second round of the NCAA tournament, all this stuff that we're mentioning, it's just about going out and executing. We can talk about all this side stuff, but it's about going out and executing.
Hey, make sure you ask Timmerman when was the last time an SEC team had 100 hung on them in a non-conference game.
Yeah, I don't know.
Don't see how, you know, I mean, that to me stood out more than anything else. And, you know, let's face it, they probably could have put more than 100. What was it, 104? They could have easily had 112, easily. But, you know, Josh pulled his guys out. I want to give everybody a chance to play. But, you know, when it's all said and done, these things don't happen to SEC teams. Period.
They do not.
If you're in the tournament, this doesn't happen. So I think that's another just moment that we need to step back and inhale because this is something that, man, you couldn't have dreamed this one up. And in talking to Rammer and Earl before the game, they were kind of like feeling like, you know, we got a shot, you know, because everybody does in the tournament. I mean, you know, St. Louis U's not the only one that has people talking. High Point. And most people couldn't find High Point on the map if they let them off in the middle of the campus, okay? I mean, there's some schools that are out there, man, that are just like, you know what? You know what? We believe. All we need to do is believe in each other, and we got a shot. And, you know, we'll see what happens with SLU, and we got Mizzou tonight. They'll have their hands full as well. Miami's a good team. They're long. They have some real good athletes. I've had a chance to catch them a couple of times locally. That's going to be a very interesting game.
That's Mike Claiborne. I'm Matt Pauly. Claibs, this is probably the last time we'll chat before you head back to St. Louis, so safe travels, and we'll see you in a few days.
I'll see you on Wednesday at the workout and certainly on opening day, and have a great rest of your show and enjoy the basketball for the weekend because we're going to be playing next weekend too.
Let's go. That's Mike Claiborne. Right. I'm Matt Pauly. This is the Gas House Gang. More in a moment here on KMOX.
The runner tipped away. Recovered by Cyril.
There you go.
Cross court stolen away by Green.
Run with him.
One man to beat. Weaves, drives, hack, layup, good! Trey Green, the steal, and the bucket.
It is the Gas House Gang right here on KMOX. My name's Matt Pauly. Last night, it's an all-timer, man. It is an all-timer for Billikens basketball. First round of the NCAA tournament, you talk about running a team off the floor. That's exactly what they did. SLU knocking off Georgia 102-77. This is a game that Georgia was slightly favored in, and SLU got off to a hot start. They finished the first half strong, went into the second half, and it had an incredible run to start things, and Georgia just never had a chance. Happy to welcome on to the program. He's on the Billikens beat for the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. He is Tom Timmerman. You follow him on Twitter at Tom Tim with two M's, Tom and then T-I-M-M. Tom, appreciate you taking time with us today. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. It's a kind of a gray and drizzly day today in Buffalo, but you would never know it by talking to anyone with St. Louis University.
Yeah, nobody expected that kind of – that was one of those games that I think everybody in college basketball circled as being, okay, this can be a good one. How surprised were you when the Billikens got off to that kind of starting? It's not about being surprised they won. It's about being surprised about how they won.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't a whole lot of games like that one. And especially, I mean, they were up 17 at the half. And okay, they blew a 15-point lead against Stanford earlier this year. And so we're going to see how they have not been great of late, and so how are they going to handle it? And then when they came out that stretch at the start of the second half, when they went 18-0 against Georgia, that was just an incredible stretch of basketball. It just kept coming and coming and coming, and Georgia would turn the ball over and miss shots, and SLU just kept running. And I mean, for all those points, and especially in the first half, and they got better in the second half, they did not hit a lot of threes. This was not a three-point shooting night, but they were 33 of 44, 75% on two-pointers, which is the second best in the school history in the Ken Pom era, going back to 1997. So, I mean, that was just an incredible day of driving to the basket and the layups, and the number of no dribble layups, the number of passes to a guy who was underneath the basket who just laid it in was staggering. It was just an amazing performance by that team.
You always do the thing where you're like, okay, what are the ways that a team could potentially lose a game? And going into that game yesterday, I was worried about the officials. I was worried about free throw shooting maybe really being an advantage for Georgia. And Tom, it was a big advantage for Georgia. They got a lot more free throw opportunities than the Billikens did last night, in part because the Billikens scored a bunch of baskets where they never got touched by Georgia. But that being said, even with that free throw disparity, SLU still wins in the fashion that they did. So between that and not hitting many threes in the first half, like, that seemed like an equation for it not to be good for the Billikens, yet it ended up not really impacting things.
No, it didn't. And one of the referees last night was a referee who also worked the SLU-Dayton game at the conference tournament, in which Dayton went to the foul line about 3,000 times. So, you see that and you think, oh, that's not a good omen. But, yeah, I mean, the fact that SLU, out-rebounds Georgia, which is very good rebounding, team 47-36, that they cut the turnovers down to 13, which was progress there. Yeah, I mean, they did a great job defensively, and that's something that gets overlooked when you score 102 points. I mean, Georgia shoots 25%, in the first half, 43% in the second half, 15% on three-pointers in the first half. And SLU just did a number on those guys. And it's like, you look at that game and think, well, people were saying good things about Georgia, and this is they didn't show it. I mean, when Kenai Ketchum's 0-for-11 from the field, they just had it was a bad day for them, and that was greatly set upon them by St. Louis University, who had six guys in double figures and two guys at 9 points who were a possession away from joining them in double figures. It was just an amazingly all around effort by SLU.
Mike Claiborne brought this up in our last segment, and I think it's interesting. When you think about SEC teams playing non-conference games, so maybe non-conference during the actual non-conference season, maybe some of these MTEs that they're involved with, and certainly in the postseason as well, against a non-power opponent team, Tom, it doesn't happen very often where a team puts up 100 on an SEC team in one of these non-conference situations. I don't know how often it's happened in recent years, but it hasn't happened very often.
No, it hasn't. And, SLU and teams like Miami, Ohio, trying to get these teams, on their schedules. And games like this aren't going to help because, if you're in the SEC or the Big Ten or Big 12, are you trying to schedule St. Louis University now? No. I mean, there is no reason now to schedule these guys, until they reach like a Gonzaga level. But they are not going to get on anybody's schedules now after games like this because it's scary.
I think I saw on social media, I can't confirm this, I didn't actually go look at the Ken Pom numbers myself, but I think I saw somebody say on social media last night that this jumped their Ken Pom 10 points. That's unheard of at this point in the season to have something happen that can jump your Ken Pom 10 points. But Tom, that goes to the point you're just saying, the schedule that SLU has played puts it where a game like this against this kind of opponent is incredibly impactful because of you just didn't have these opportunities during the rest of the year.
Right. Yeah. They're up to 32 now at Ken Pom. They were 40 going into the game. At one point yesterday, they were 31 after they won. And I think when the numbers settled and other results, they ended up at 32. But yeah, I mean, which is almost as high, they got into the 20s earlier this year, but yeah, I mean, that's a big jump. You want to see it really jump. If they beat Michigan on Saturday, then it's because they're 3 in Ken Pom. That would be a very big jump for the Billikens. And that will be a tough one for all the energy and momentum they go. But, that's going to be done. But as Schertz told us last night, said, look, it's not best of seven. It's one game. And anything can happen in one college basketball game. So it will be tough. And Michigan's got big guys and talented guys. And it'll be a fun game. But, yeah, that will be a tough challenge for SLU in the next round.
Can you set the scene for us for today? What are they doing? Is there any public practice? Is it about getting off their feet more than anything else? Just what are the Billikens doing today, especially in front of an early game tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, that game finished at about 12:15 a.m. local time, and I would imagine they didn't get back to the hotel till 1 a.m., and I would, if not, probably maybe even later than that. I forget when I saw Quentin Jones in the hallway afterwards, but I can't imagine any of those said, oh, now I'll just go to sleep. I would imagine that they're probably up till 3 a.m. or so. They're on the practice court for a closed practice session, I believe at 4:30 today at the arena. So I think everybody got a good night's sleep. I'm sure the coaches were up all night doing scouting. The Friday in between games is always closed practices at the arena. So they'll be there from about 4:30 to 5:30, and then I'm sure they'll try to get them to bed early. Because, it'll be a 12:10 local time tip-off on Saturday. And this is, talk about it. They had a 10:30 body time tip-off in Pittsburgh in the conference tournament, and then a game that tipped off at 10 o'clock, last night, and then back to an afternoon game. So they've been all over the map. But, these guys are 21 years old. If anyone's going to do it, it's going to be them. And these guys are so pumped to play. And, they'll do it anytime, anywhere, I imagine.
One of the most amazing things about this is how close Josh Schertz is with Michigan coach Dusty May. So much so, Tom, they share practice film with each other. So they literally have each other's practice film. It felt like SLU caught Georgia off guard yesterday with their offense. I don't think that's going to happen with Michigan.
No, it will not. Josh has been joking about that since the bracket came out. And it's like, well, we've got their practice plans. They've got our practice plans. Schertz joking around last night said, well, we know that we'll have better coaching. We'll be better on the sidelines in this game than they will. And apparently it sounds like actually Dusty May ran into Schertz in the hallway at halftime of the SLU game yesterday and said, it looks like we got to start getting ready for you guys. So it is something where two guys who are really close friends who talk a lot and who know everything it is about each other's team. So there's a lot of respect there. But Schertz thinks, one game we can pull this off.
Final thing for Tom Timmerman, doing a great job covering the Billikens run for the Post-Dispatch and STL today. Is this something where if the Billikens put their best effort on the floor, is it still going to take Michigan, maybe Keith Lytle? What's the equation for the Billikens pulling off the upset?
Yeah, I mean, they've got to play a really strong game defensively because that will get the SLU offense going. They've got to be, they had a lot of foul trouble yesterday. That could have been bad. They had three guys get two fouls in the first half. And if anyone had gotten to three, because Schertz had to play these guys in the first half, even with foul trouble. So if they get guys, and that takes, Avila or, Deion Brown or one of the shooters out, that's going to be a problem. So keep turnovers down. Don't commit fouls and send them to the line a lot. And, then play a solid defense. And then, if they do that, they're in good shape because those defensive stops, once SLU gets its offense going, that can make things happen. That's what decimated Georgia yesterday. They really lost it when SLU started that run in the second half.
Well, Tom, we appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your time in Buffalo, and I hope that you are working the Billikens beat again next weekend as well. It'd be pretty cool if they could find a way to win tomorrow.
We could all be in Chicago, which would be much simpler to deal with than Buffalo.
Very, very good. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Matt. Bye.
Yep. That's Tom Timmerman joining us here on the program. Real quick programming note for you. If you're a casual listener of what's going on, just lock in for a second, especially if you want to listen to the Billikens game tomorrow. This is very important on how you can actually find Rammer and Earl, because we're in that time period where we've got the Cardinals, Billikens, you know, both going at the same time. So if you want to listen to the Billikens game tomorrow, you are going to do that on 11:20 a.m. So I know many of you are listening right now on 104.1 FM. We love having the FM signal. You will have to switch over to 11:20 a.m. if you want to listen to the Billikens tomorrow. We'll have Cardinals baseball, and the Cardinals are going to be on the FM. So Cardinals, 104.1 FM, Billikens, 11:20 a.m. There's going to be a quiz on this at the end of the program one more time. Billikens, 11:20 a.m. I cannot repeat that enough times. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about the Cardinals, and we'll wrap up this edition of the Gas House Game. My name is Matt Pauly. More in a moment here on KMOX. Just a few minutes left on this edition of the program. It is the Gas House Gang. When we wrap up, you'll get your 1 o'clock news, then the Dave Glover Show, and then after that, I'll be back with you alongside of Bernie Miklas for Redbird Rush Hour from 5 to 6, and then a full Sports Open Line tonight from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. So if you don't want to hear me, I've got bad news for you. I'm going to be on a lot between now and 8 o'clock today. And then we do our Gas House Gang replay at 8 o'clock. So you're just, man, you are stuck with me today here on KMOX. We got a good question on the text line. I mentioned going to break the last time that tomorrow we're splitting the signals with the Cardinals being on 104.1 FM and the Billikens being on the AM, 11:20 AM for their big, big game against Michigan. Got a text message, and I'm sure a lot of people are wondering about this. So nice job from the texter from the 314 said, what about the Odyssey app tomorrow? Can you get 11:20 or only 104.1, as that's what comes up when I open the Odyssey app? So here is the answer, and you might not like the answer. The NCAA takes control of all digital rights to broadcast once you get into the NCAA tournament. So unfortunately, the only way to hear Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. tomorrow will be on 11:20 a.m. So just keep that in the back of the mind. We love everybody who listens to KMOX on the Odyssey app. That's a great way, more often than not, to listen. But because of the big bad people over at the NCAA, we can pick up our pitchforks and we can march to Indianapolis. Because of that, we will not be audio streaming that game. They do not allow us. If you get angry, don't get angry at KMOX. Don't get angry at SLU. Don't get angry at Rammer and Earl. Get angry at the NCAA. Just let them know how you feel about that. But that is the situation. We can't do anything about it. The NCAA controls those rights when it comes to the NCAA men's basketball tournament. So yeah, there you go. That's not the news you want to hear. Don't get mad at me as the messenger. I can name all the people that you should not get mad at, and I am among. If you want to get mad at Matt Pajeski, feel free. I'm not gonna yell at you about getting mad at Matt Pajeski. Cardinals, well, by the way, they are playing.
No respect.
There you go. A little Rodney Dangerfield there as we start to wrap up the program for today. Cardinals right now are in Port St. Lucie. They lead the Mets 1-0, top of the fourth inning on a Ramon Arias home run. Good to see him go deep. Jordan Walker's at the plate right now. You'd like to see him maybe do something before spring comes to an end. Really feels like he's going to be on this roster to open up the season. And if he can find himself a little bit over the next few days, that would go a long, long way towards making people feel better about what the Cardinals might be from an offensive standpoint, because right now I don't know who's going to be in the outfield. I don't know who's going to be productive out of the outfield either. Dave Glover Show on the way next for 4 hours, and then I'm back with you along with Bernie Miklas for Redbird Rush Hour. That's going to begin at 5 o'clock. Thanks to Tom Timmerman for joining us today. Thanks to Mike Claiborne for being with us. And we'll talk to you coming up in just a while right here on your home for the Cardinals, KMOX.